Hi, my name is Nathan Totten, and welcome to Cloud Cover.
I'm Nick Harris.
I once again let you introduce yourself.
Thank you. I almost forgot my name. It's been so long.
We had to do three or four takes of that since we had some difficulties. We've been gone for a few weeks. We were both at Tech Ed New Zealand and Australia.
That's right.
Which I think our presentations will be, they're available to watch. So we'll put some links to those.
They're available on Channel 9 already.
But we'll put some links down there.
Righto.
So let's go ahead and jump into the news, I guess. First thing, we've talked about Windows Azure Active Directory before. We had Vittorio on here a month ago or so talking about Windows Azure AD. A couple new things they announced today, or nope, last week.
You missed it. Well,
we're behind. Last week is, yes. Ability to create standalone AD tenants. So before, you could use Windows Azure Active Directory with Office 365, or you had to have some sort of Microsoft service into Office 365. Now you can create those accounts separately. So that's good. And then new management interface, a preview of that, and now you can actually write to the Graph API, no longer just query. So a couple enhancements, and that's only actually been out for about 6 weeks, so they're really churning on enhancements to that, which is great.
Have they got a screenshot of the management interface?
They have this nice screenshot. Okay. Look at that. That's pretty.
Yeah.
And it looks like here's, kind of nice, similar to Windows Azure theme, which is good. I assume eventually that'll be in the Windows Azure portal, or not. I don't know. I don't really know what they do. I don't know what their plans are. We can make random announcements like we've done before and just commit to things.
Commit to product features.
Yes. And tomorrow it will have space travel. All right. Next up is some announcements, updates to SQL databases, which is great. Been a little quiet on SQL for a while. We haven't really seen too much from them. But some cool updates. I think you've got a little. Yeah. Are you going to demo these?
I think we'll do a demo of one of them. But the key four updates that they've got there is SQL Server support for linked servers. So now you can actually add an Azure database as a linked server within your on-prem DB. That allows you to perform distributed queries.
Is it the same data, or it's actually like a federated type?
No, it's basically so with SQL Server on premise today, you can add say an Excel database.
Okay.
An Excel database. That's sort of funny. An Excel spreadsheet as a linked server.
Okay.
And then query that. Likewise, say on prem today, you can add another SQL DB as a linked server.
Mm-hmm.
Now what we can do is we can add SQL Azure as a linked server. And we can write a query that essentially perhaps may select something from my local on-prem DB and union it with a query from your Azure DB. So that's it, and we'll do a demo.
Cool. All right, we'll do a demo during the, or maybe we'll save that to the end.
Yeah.
Cool.
And other things there, recursive triggers are now supported in SQL database. DBCC show statistics is there, so you can see, you know, your query plan stats. And also the ability to configure the database firewall from within the DB.
At the database level, rather than applying it to the entire server. Now you can have one server that has different rules.
That's right.
Cool.
Different DBs.
Awesome. Let's see. Next up, this Windows Azure Online Backup now supports System Center. So this Windows Azure Online Backup is a backup, I guess, host or service for Windows Server 2012. They actually now added support for System Center and System Center 2012 SP1. You can use its, I believe it's called, what is it, the database protection, or the data protection manager component.
Yeah.
You can use that integrated and use Windows Azure Online Backup to store the data from System Center. So pretty cool, extending that sort of hybrid cloud, cloud on-prem scenario.
Yeah.
Cool beans. next up.
You're a little bit out of practice, Nate.
All right.
What's going on?
Next up, Web Matrix 2. I wrote a blog post last week about this also. There's been a number of blog posts. Web Matrix 2, it's been available in RC for some time, I think since the June release of Windows Azure, around the same time. Now it's released fully done, fully baked.
Cool.
But some really cool features for Windows Azure also in there. Node.js, deployments directly to Windows Azure websites using the published profile, that same profile or same published dialogue you would have in Visual Studio. All kinds of cloud tooling. You can you can create a site, say a WordPress site using Windows Azure websites through the gallery, open that in WebMatrix, edit it, republish it.
Is there full IntelliSense support for, say, Node.js?
Yeah, so WebMatrix does actually have some really rich IntelliSense do they call it IntelliSense? I don't even know.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Auto magic.
Now we're gonna have the lawyers email us. Yeah, auto magic. Some sort of it does have code completion
it's
IntelliSense.
Got control space.
So no, so it's yeah. This, it's sort of the same where you but it, for like Node.js for example, it does it does IntelliSense for like which Node packages you have installed.
Right.
It does actually it'll do IntelliSense through the Node packages and it's actually rich. So it knows, like, if you have a JS file that's a server-side JS file, it will only give you the appropriate Node APIs. You won't actually have, like, the document or the DOM right. APIs, which is really okay. cool. But then if you open a client-side JavaScript file, yep. it will give you those DOM APIs. So it's actually smart enough to know if it's client or server-side.
Pretty
and similar
sweet.
With, like, PHP, we actually give you rich IntelliSense for PHP, and then also, like if you're using something like WordPress, they actually have IntelliSense for all the WordPress specific methods. So it makes developing pretty easy. Some pretty cool stuff, and then of course, really nice support for like Razor and the ASP.NET stack as well,
okay.
And HTML5, all kinds of stuff. So all kinds of goodness. Some of it's the same sort of thing you'd see in Visual Studio, like the CSS color picker, different things like that exist in Visual Studio and WebMatrix. But from more of the open source stuff, the non Microsoft stack. We have a lot of different tooling in WebMatrix that you actually don't find in Visual Studio. So some pretty cool things.
Nice.
There's a number of really good posts about it. Scott Hanselman just published a post on it. Scott Guthrie has Scott Hanselman has a post, and then a couple other ones. We'll put some links too. So very good.
Yeah.
Good. Now.
What else do you have?
I don't know. Should we take a nap or something?
I don't know. The jet lag. I did wake up early this morning.
Hey.
The early time of 9 a.m.
Oh yeah, you've been waking up at. It's not been that. It's been quite a while. Like I don't know why it takes you so.
Got back Sunday night. It's been like 3 days.
It took me like one day to adjust.
Okay.
I was tired, a bit tired the first night that I arrived.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to bed at like 9.
Right.
The second night I was tired. I went to bed at like 10.
All right.
And then I was fine after that.
Okay.
You're going to be like, but you're going to, if I recall from when you moved here, you were tired for like several months. So it takes you several months to readjust your jet lag, which makes those week-long trips sort of difficult.
Yes.
All right. So,
what's this one?
So our main thing we're going to be talking about today, we've got some demos for, is around some of the improvements to Windows Azure websites. So this is a post by Scott Guthrie.
Right.
Basically, he goes through some of the changes. We actually just added a bunch of new features. So, of course, Windows Azure websites was released in preview in June. It's still in preview, but we were continually adding some stuff. We actually have added things... actually kind of almost silently without announcing, we added some support for Entity Framework CodeFirst migrations, which I'll show in a little bit. But now we have some more stuff with our tiers, our shared tiers, and also Scott did talk about some guidance for pricing. So one of the first things, which is really cool, is we actually now have three tiers three scale tiers on Windows Azure websites.
Right.
So there's shared and reserved, which we had from preview. We also have this free model, and free is really the same as shared. It's just more of what you can do with it. So there's some restrictions on like daily bandwidth and things. But we now have the free model. It's built in the portal, so it's very explicit. Like if you're not paying for a site, it's very explicit what you're going to get with that.
Right.
And then the good thing also, Scott announced that we will continue that free tier. After GA, so that's something we're going to have in Windows. Windows Azure websites will remain, at least some model will remain free going forward, forever. So that's pretty good. He also talks about some pricing. You know, in preview, we haven't announced GA pricing, but he's now sort of talked about what the shared pricing is. Right, it's basically 1.3 cents an hour for a shared instance, which comes to about $9 US dollars a month.
Okay.
So pretty reasonable price for that's for one instance of a shared model. You could of course have multiple instances, and then the reserved sort of the same. VM started 8 cents an hour for the small VM.
Yep.
So kind of the same prices, and you can go up and down. The other cool thing with scale, I don't know if you've used Windows Azure websites, you may have noticed if you scale up from, say, shared to reserved, you actually have to scale your entire subscription. So if you have, say, three sites on one subscription, if you move, say, one of those sites to reserved, they all actually go to reserved. That's no longer necessary. You can actually control sites individually now, which is great. And different. I actually can't remember if. I don't know if we I'll have to look. Can't actually remember. So we will also support you deploying in multiple regions with the same subscription. Previously, it was locked to multiple regions. I'm not actually sure if we have that yet, or if he said we're getting it in there. I'll clarify later. We'll put one of our correction notes, or we'll just edit this out entirely if I'm making it up. But basically you'll be able to deploy from a single subscription to multiple data centers, which right now you kind of just the way the preview environment was set up.
It was
we had it in two locations. Right. It's in three now. But when you first deployed, it would pin your subscription to that. So like if you picked ECUS on the first one, you had to deploy all of them to ECUS. Right. That's either no long. I should just say it both ways. That is no longer possible, or I won't make Bob do that. But yeah, it's either no longer possible or it is coming. Right. So we'll figure that out.
We can check that out.
Yes.
Custom domain support.
Oh yeah, that's a big
important.
One. That's a big one. That's our.
How
our
could you miss that?
Yes, I forgot about that. So we now support. Two things we support: custom domains, both CNAMEs. And A records root domains, Microsoft.com without the www, in both shared and reserved. So before we supported only, when we first launched, we supported only CNAMEs, www.microsoft.com, in reserved instance only. Now we support both of those in shared or reserved instances.
Okay.
So the next really cool thing, a whole bunch of improvements. So and again, this is kind of we really just merged, right? Because we're out of practice.
Yeah.
At some point, the news stopped, and now we've gone into the main segment. So we're gonna do some demos, but I don't even care anymore.
we'll pick it up again next week.
Yeah, yeah. We'll try to get it back on track.
Yeah.
This has been a reoccur. It takes us a few episodes to get back in the groove of things. So the next thing is continuous deployment. So we've offered Git deployment, web deploy, FTP if you want to go really old school, to deploy to Windows Azure websites. Now we actually offer we offer continuous integration. So continuous integration with Git to GitHub or CodePlex. So a couple really cool things. We make it super easy to set up. We added these buttons here, the setup TFS, setup Git publishing, and then it kind of goes through. So one thing to note is we already had a really rich experience with TFS. You could already set up the continuous integration through our TFS preview. So that was super easy. The buttons are still there. The button's there. Sorry, I said we added it. We also have the Git button, which we had before. But when you click Git publish settings, you sort of get this. Deploy GitHub project. Which the really cool feature that I like about this is that the publishing actually supports publishing from multiple branches. So a lot of people have asked like how you do staging deployments, production deployments, things like that with Windows Azure websites, because there's no notion of like a VIP swap or anything. So through this new deployment, you can actually have multiple Git branches, say like a production, a staging, et cetera branch. And so when you push there, the script deploys to say your staging environment or your dev or test environment. So it's very easy now to have multiple like a dev, a staging, and a production environment deploying all routed either through GitHub or CodePlex. So it's integrated with their source control. So really nice. And then, of course, you could, again, as I mentioned, also do that with TFS. So a lot of really great new features with Windows Azure websites. Again, we're continually adding stuff to this. Scott also pointed out that we don't yet support Windows Server 2012, but that's coming soon. Yeah. So, and that'll enable like some really cool scenarios like WebSockets, things like that. So we're working on that, not quite yet, but really great to see. I mean, we're iterating on Windows Azure websites and the rest of the platform. We're starting to get into this very fast pace of iteration, continue adding new features, which I think is awesome. So yeah, let's do some quick demos.
And now our feature presentation.
All right, so the first thing, let's go ahead and create a new website. We haven't really done a show specifically on Windows Azure website, so I'm also going to show kind of just some things that, some of the basics in case anyone missed our epic, like, two-hour adventure when this stuff all came out in June. So quick create new. I'm going to do a quick create with the database just because I'm actually going to show some of those EF migration features. I'm going to pick my subscription, choose my region, cloud cover. Actually, let's call it.
No one's got
Nick's
cloud cover.
Taxes.
All right.
Create a new database and click next. We're going to use, I guess we'll create a new server.
Okay.
Login name. Are you going to create? Are you going in there to create a cloud cover website? No. This isn't live, so no one's gonna do. I thought that's what you were doing. You looked bored. Anyway, so we're gonna choose a region and create our database. So this is, we can either select an existing server or we're gonna create a new server.
So this is gonna provision a new logical SQL. Database.
So yeah, we're presenting
and the database and, within
exactly.
That.
Yep, right. And it's just going to take a few seconds. So now our site's created. Click in there, and then we're going to see our dashboard, which we kind of give you a default view of our site. You know, kind of what you've used for bandwidth and all kinds of things. And by default, you're set on the free account. So let's go over to scale and show those new scaling options we talked about. So again, we're on free. We can go up to 3 instances. We can go to shared if we want to go up higher. And right now you'll notice that we are restricted to 3. This is a preview feature. Eventually you'll be able to go up quite large. Or you can go up even to the reserve. So we can go and, you know, say select a medium, 2 medium instances, leave our database and save that so we can actually scale up to a large scale web application pretty easily. And you'll notice the one cool thing is this takes only a few seconds. This only takes about as long as it took us to create the site in the first place to actually do the scale. And we're getting 2 dedicated medium virtual machines that are just for our website. So just a few seconds. And also the site stays live while that's happening.
What other options do we have in the instance size there?
So there's small, medium, and large. We don't have extra small, and we don't have extra large. We've talked about, I know that there's been, some people have asked, you know, why don't we have extra small, things like that, but these are kind of these are the 3 most common. Like, if you're using extra small, you really should might as well just be using shared. I don't think there's any, I couldn't really see any reason to have a reserved extra small instance, which is why I think they restricted it, right, to that, just because the resources, I believe, are similar between what you'd kind of get with shared or a extra small. Because if you remember, extra small VM for cloud services is not like, you don't get a dedicated core, you don't have dedicated shared memory, things like that. So yeah, it's kind of the same thing. And then extra large, I don't know why we don't have extra large in there. Presumably eventually we will. But you can, of course, scale out so you don't, maybe, you probably isn't no real need to have anything larger than 4 cores and 7. So the next thing we talked about is, remember, we had the custom domain name. So now we have this manage domains button here, and you'll see that you have an IP address assigned to your site. And this allows you to, you know, do www.nickstaxes.com.
That may be something real.
Yeah. So, well, it doesn't matter. You're worried. It is real. I've published your tax returns on there. No. But yeah, so it does it doesn't matter. Don't worry. It does validate your DNS records. So you actually have to set the DNS records before you set it. But then you can also, again, set a root domain name, which it will do the same thing and validate that we need to have this A record pointing to the IP address.
Right.
So pretty cool, though. It enables you to do a lot of, you know, pretty much anything you'd want. You know, you don't have the restriction of using you know, Azure websites or just a CNAME now, which is great. The other big thing people have asked for is SSL support. It's unfortunately not something we've still got to yet. We are certainly going to support SSL. We do support a wildcard certificate on, you know, mysite.azurewebsites.net right now. But on your, we don't have a way to upload your own custom certificate for like your domain or your CNAME or your own wildcard cert. Certainly coming, and you know that's something we're working on. We'll it'll be in one before we kind of release support it, you know, GA, etc. But it isn't available right now, so I know a lot of people have asked that. But domains is probably the biggest ask people have had, so we got that in pretty quick. So really cool. That's about it. I mean, we've talked about Windows Azure websites before, so I don't want to show the dashboard too much. But what I do want to show is just a quick demo of kind of using that EF migrations, and then maybe some of the other stuff if we have time. Okay. So just the EF migrations is super simple. Let me just create a new Windows Azure web, just a new website. I'm going to create an ASP application. Let's just put that in D demo. And select internet application, or actually, how about we just do internet app, and then, so this is just a regular MVC site, right? We don't have to create a cloud, Windows Azure site, a cloud service, anything like that, just a regular ASP.NET MVC site. So just the just the regular standard one here. So I just want to show you. I know that there's probably other resources on EF Code First, so I don't want to dive too deep into it. But I just want to show kind of how it works on Windows Azure websites. All right. So let's just make a quick simple data model. New class. So expenses. Right. We'll put your expenses as our model. ID and name, and what's the amount? What do you use for money? Decimal, right?
That will do.
That's the standard one, I think, right? I
believe so.
And amount. And that'll do for now. So the name. The amount of your expense. Aren't you looking forward to this? and that's it. So let's and then the next thing we need to do is add just our EF Code First model. So taxes model or context, excuse me. And so now we've got our model there created. We need to build that so we can use the tooling. And then I'm just going to go ahead and create a new controller.
So that DB set essentially said create a table, Entity Framework Code First Migration is going to create a table called expenses that has the columns that the expenses class had.
Yep. So right now we're actually using, so it's interesting, by default Entity Framework sort of does everything automatically for us. It's just going to, if, you know, we're going to have a connection string, and it's going to look, and if the table doesn't exist, it's going to create it, and it's going to add the columns, etc. If we add a new column, it's going to do it. So it's kind of set to an automatic mode. What I'm going to show is actually more of a manual if you want to control the migrations, which is really great for, you know, like more serious development. You're going to require like a staging environment or production. You're going to want to roll back if something breaks. You know, you're going to want to have maybe default values. So I'm going to show kind of how you can do that you may want to provide default seed data to your database while you're testing. Yeah. So there's a lot of different things you can do with migrations and have that actually run on the server when you deploy. So that's actually what I want to show rather than the automatic. But the EF Code First is awesome. I mean, this right now, we're actually ready. We could actually run this right now without changing the connection string. It's just automatically pointed to our local DB. So it's really super easy. So let's create a taxes controller. We can use the MVC tooling to select our model, in this case expenses, and then we can select our DB context, and this is taxes context, and then we're going to create a MVC controller with just the standard read-write actions using EF Code First. We'll just use Razor View Engine, click Create, and it's going to create the controller, and then it's also going to create the views for us. So this just takes a second. And so we now have our taxes, our taxes views and our taxes controller. So I just want to, let's run that locally and just see what we get. Taxes. So create new expense and beer. Amount, I don't know what, $250,000 probably. I don't know, okay, let's be realistic. $10,000 for the year.
probably something along those lines.
I guess we probably, I don't know, can we use the comma? I don't even know. So we've got one expense there. The next one, trips, plane tickets, down under. Plane tickets down under to go home. Those are pretty expensive. They're like $2,000, right? Yeah. There we go. So we've got two expenses. They're very exciting. So we've got this app running, again, without changing the connection string, local database. So this isn't necessarily a tutorial on EF code first. There's a bunch of other resources there, but really easy to get started. Now, we want to deploy this, though, to Windows Azure. But so say we're doing testing, we want to actually provide some seed data for this, because we don't want to have to go through the process of manually adding this every time. Yep. So let's go ahead and just set up migrations to actually allow us to sort of pre-populate that so we can have someone go test our application. So right now we already have EF Code First installed. So what I want to do is actually enable migrations. Oops. So enable migrations. And oops, I have multiple contexts, so let's use our taxes context. So the default sample comes with a user context also. So
did you like that dialog that pops up?
Yeah,
it's waiting for a background operation to complete.
Yes,
and it's modal, so you can't do anything while that background operation runs.
Yes, we'll migration data. Oops, what did it say? Cool. So it created our database. Initial create. So this, it has a configuration basically, and then this initial create. And so this initial create now. So the first time was automatic. We just did it, everything automatic. Now it's all manual. So we've got an up and a down. So this is really cool. When we're migrating up, it creates the table for us. When we're going down, it would drop this table. So you can assume, you know, you can, as you would evolve your application, you would go up and down, doing different things like this, which is pretty cool. You have also got a configuration, and this is where we can actually seed our database. So I want to add some of those expenses automatically when I deploy, so that I have it, okay, so I can do testing. So it's pretty easy. Context expenses dot add or update. So there's an extension on here. This isn't normally used in EF, but there's an extension here that you can use to do an add or an update, okay, and then do new expense.
We'll need to
models and ID. So let's set the ID equal to 1, amount equal to 10,000, and the name equal to beer.
Cool.
And let's copy this and do another 2,000 plane tickets down under. And for good measure, let's just add another one. 500. And so my birthday's coming up, so this is Nate's birthday present.
These are in cents, right?
So we got three expense items now, and then let's use context. Save changes. Okay, so now we have our migration, our seed migration running. So now I want to deploy this to Windows Azure. So I'm going to download this publish profile. So just save that, and this contains all of our publish information that we need to actually publish to Windows Azure. Right-click publish, and then I'm going to import that publish profile, Nick's taxes. And you see it just sets everything for us, password, everything, pretty simple to do. The other thing to notice here is it actually also sets our connection string. So because we created that website with a database and we have that as a linked resource, that publish setting contains our database connection string information. And so it actually knows that, you know, we don't want to use LocalDB, we want to use this database in Windows Azure. So setting both of our connection strings, we don't even have to set up. We don't have to set up web config migrations or anything. But then the next really cool thing is if you click this execute code first migrations, it's actually going to run these migrations we created when it publishes to Windows Azure. Set up our database, add the tables, etc. So let's just publish that really quickly. So other thing to point out, while this is publishing, the first time publishing to Windows Azure, it's going to take a little bit longer because we're actually uploading all of our dependent assemblies, all of the NuGet packages we're using, all that. So our entire application gets uploaded to the server. Right. But WebDeploy is actually an incremental deployment. So the next time we publish, it's only going to publish what's changed, which is really nice. So our website's loading here. Just close that. Takes a second the first time, and then let's just navigate to our taxes controller. And as you can see, there's now these three different expenses I created were seeded in the database. And because I use that add or update method, we actually they won't actually be added to they won't be added every single time we deploy. So it's smart enough to kind of know. And you can put logic in there. You know, if it's doing this, you can import data. All kinds of things you can do. But really easy, very fast way to get your data migrated to Windows or to get your data migrated to Windows Azure and publish everything. So. With that, I think we're nearing the end of our time. Well, with my lunch coming up.
Refresh on that.
Uh-oh. Oh, geez. Buy native. That is not a polo. Thank you. Awesome.
All right. Some birthday the ideas for you.
What is this? These are not tasks. You're going back to the tasks list demo. These are your yearly expenses.
I knew I missed something.
So super easy to do the migration. So that's the one thing I want to show you. Right. And then of course we could add our custom domain to this and put this on nixtaxes.com, which I'll be publishing your year end tax returns all there for everyone to see, and then steal your identity. So we could use our custom domain. We could use a CNAME. All kinds of stuff. We really don't have time now to show the Git publishing, but let me just walk through that really quick. So we've got set up Git publishing. So it's going to set. So instead of doing web deploy now, we're going to set up this set up a Git repository to do publishing that way. And then, as mentioned, we could publish through CodePlex. So the first thing we need to do to set up Git publishing is click this Authorize Windows Azure. I've actually already authorized the app before, so it's going to skip that step. It's just doing OAuth to GitHub. And then I'm actually going to select the repository to use. So I actually just created a new one, ntotten, in my public repo, and then this in my public user name, and then Nix Taxes. So I'm going to select that. And this could be certainly private or public. I made it public. So now it's linked, and then the deployment will actually start where it's gonna. It's gonna deploy our website with nothing in it. So the next thing we need to do is actually publish. It's actually gonna break our site because I didn't put anything in that repository, and now we have nothing in there because it actually published my empty repository. So let me just go ahead and go back to our application we made and set that up to publish to GitHub. So first, I'm gonna initialize that repository, and I'm going to add the remote. Oops, add remote origin, and then I'm going to add that GitHub. So notice this is the GitHub remote, not the Windows Azure website's remote. Oops. So I added the remote there. Right. And then now I'm going to just commit my work git add. So I committed that, and then the next thing I'm going to do is push this up to GitHub, and then as soon as that's done, it'll trigger off a deployment to our Windows Azure website. So we've now pushed our repository up to GitHub, and let's go see that here. Got our new repo, and then let's go back to our Windows Azure website, and we'll see that it's actually deploying.
Awesome.
So now that it's deployed, let's just navigate to our site, and there we go.
Nice.
So we showed how we can use the EF Code First migrations using Web Deploy to make it really easy to publish our database to Windows Azure, doing the seed, updating, migrating our database, all kinds of stuff. And then we also showed the cool new integration we have through Git deployment with GitHub or CodePlex. So two really great enhancements. Again, the domains are added, the new scale options. So a lot of cool enhancements to Windows Azure websites. Right. It's getting sort of better and better every day. So with that, I think it's time for we haven't done a tip of the week in a while, but
we can do the Link Server as tip of the week.
We'll do your thing as tip of the week. So with
just
that,
just gave away what the tip of the week was.
All right.
Okay.
With that, the tip of the week.
Prescription for travel. It's the new Motoramic Chevrolet. More than a new car, a new concept of low-cost motoring. A revolutionary new ride. Only the new Chevrolet has new Glide Ride front suspension that absorbs road shocks. New power with the new Chevrolet Valvin Head Turbo Fire V8 engine and two new Blue Flame 6s.
And we're back.
And we're back.
All right.
All right.
So,
Sue,
I'm at it. I'm going to leave.
So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the new Link Server feature that we can now use. So I'm going to have my on-premise, or in this case, my local SQL Express instance, add an Azure server for SQL database as a Link Server. And then I'm going to write a query that basically queries my Azure instance and then unions the results with my local instance's data.
Cool.
So it's quite straightforward. The first thing that we do here is we can add a Link Server, either using a stored proc, or if we come down, we can see this is my SQL Express DB, and up the top here is my Azure DB. So we're actually adding the Link Server to my SQL Express DB. So once we've done it, it'll be here. You could do it using the UI, like this, or you can use a stored proc. So let's have a look at this. We're going to execute sp add Link Server. We're going to call it my Azure server. We're going to point that at the actual Azure server that I'm using. And we're going to give it an initial catalog of a mobile service. So that's one of my DBs in my Azure server. So let's execute this. Done. So the next thing we need to do is to actually provide the login credentials that will be used when we're executing queries here locally that are calling out to that linked server in Azure. And for that, we're just going to use a very secure username and password, and we'll execute that as well. So let's do that. So that's done. Now, if I come down and refresh my local SQL Express DB here, you'll see that now I've got my Azure server. So now I've linked that Azure server to my local SQL Express.
Okay.
So this is sort of useful sometimes when people want to write those distributed queries that span multiple databases. On-premise today, people may use this to write queries that span multiple different DB services locally. Now we can actually reach out to the cloud.
So if you were, say you had an on-premise system that had like employees and employee IDs, and you had something in the cloud that was collecting, say something like a survey or something where you had in the cloud, but it just collected the employee ID, you could actually go and join those together to sort of run a report and get like names of the employees with the survey results or something, right? Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so if we look at this here, we can see this query is executing in the context of my local SQL Express. So now I can do things like I can say select star from, and we'll come up here, and we called this, we called it my Azure server. So we're actually writing a query against this Link server in the context of our SQL Express DB. So I'm going to hit my Azure server, and then I'm going to use or query this database. And then, what happened there? There we go. And then we're going to query a particular table with a particular schema. So we'll say beerclock.channel. So let's run that. So it's going, it's hitting our Azure server, and we can see that there's two records in there. Now, within my local on-prem DB, we can see that I've got this here, and I've also got within that a channel table, or channels table. So I'm going to say select ID and URI from dbo.channels. So there's some channels in my local. So let's do a union. And now you can sort of see, like, if you were writing some kind of stored proc or whatever, you could start sort of utilizing result sets from both that link server in Azure and that local server.
That's really cool.
So you could be doing, you know, your inner joins or those sorts of things to start, you know, providing useful things from that information. Cool. And that's basically what the link server does.
Now, could you do this from, like, could you, you know, pass, like, inline SQL from an app then, or does it have to be sort of a stored procedure that does this?
No, so basically any SQL query can actually hit this. You just got to write it such that it's, you know, secure. Gotcha. You wouldn't want to be passing just plain text that you execute.
just a text box that you just let anyone pump queries into your... Write. It's always a good idea to just let your users write SQL queries and just shove them right into the database.
Yeah. But, you know, that's whilst it seems simple, it's actually quite a powerful feature.
Cool.
The one thing that I haven't shown here that I've done before is I've just configured the firewall rules to allow, you know, this machine with my current IP address to connect to that remote SQL instance.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, and that's it.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for, well, thanks for that tip that's of the week. Right. That was good. Yeah. Better than that. We're just going to edit out the rest of the show and have that. Okay. It's going to be a 6-minute show. But with that, let's call it a day, and we will be back. We will be back again next week. Hopefully a little more polished and ready to go. So thanks for watching, and as always, follow us on Twitter at @CloudCoverShow or email Nick if you have any questions. So, thanks for watching.
Thanks.
Well, that wasn't so bad.